Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He's speaking to us from Calgary. Welcome back to the show, Joseph.
Glad to be with you, Jim.
How big of an impact are all those forest fires having on the Alberta oil and gas patch?
Well, the first one, of course, is the fires and the moving the people out of the communities impacted in the Drayton Valley and Grand Prairie area. A lot of them were moved into, areas, communities to the east, some even up to Edmonton. There was talk in Calgary of getting ready to handle people here as well. And facilities were being organized for it in case the fires and the smoke started heading more south. But the companies in the industry, if there were fires near their area, drilling companies moved their rigs out. Other companies shut in their production to make sure that there was no chance of fire. Whatever equipment they could bring out, they would. The people, they would send helicopters or planes to fly over to make sure that the fires weren't encroaching, or if they were, what they needed to do. And now as things are starting to get better, companies are putting out announcements that they're starting to bring production back up. There's no fires in the area, but the smoke is still pretty bad. And many schools in the province that are in areas that are affected by the quality of the air don't allow their kids to be outside for the recess breaks. The air quality in Calgary is better today than it was 2 days ago. It was very dark and gloomy, and a red sky when you're looking at the sun or the moon. It was pretty horrible for a few days, but if you remember a few years ago when they had the BC fires and the wind brought it to Alberta, to the Calgary area, I think it was much worse. And this was maybe one bad, really bad day, but it's for people who have breathing problems, it's probably still an issue for them. And they're hoping there was going to be rain this weekend. And if there's rain, that should hopefully clear the sky and get things better for next week.
Right. So if Alberta's oil shut down, would that see a drastic hike in gasoline prices across Canada?
I don't think so. The amount of oil that's shut in, relative to the amount of production we produce, 5.8 million barrels, and we only consume about 2, so maybe the exports to the States will go slower. But the refineries in Canada will still run flat out. And again, they're preparing for summer gasoline grades, which are usually more environmentally tougher grades than you have in the wintertime. So the refiners are getting ready for the summer driving season, which is, less than a month, or just over a month away. And I think, we may see, the price of crude oil, $72 for WTI. My view is we're in a 64 to 74 price range over the next month or two. I don't think we're going to go below the low we saw in March. So maybe, 65, 66, maybe not that 64 that we were at in mid-March. The high may be 74. So, we're closer to the high right now. But normally, once you get into June, it's the shoulder season before the summer driving. And we're seeing in the States that demand is weakening as well in this shoulder season. The EIA data that came out this week showed that total demand was down by 606,000, but motor gasoline demand was down 395,000 to 8.9 million. So there is a slowdown historically at this time of year, And then it picks up once we get into the July long weekend.
Now, coming up on This Week in Money here on House Street, Wolf Richter is going to be talking about electric vehicles. And he said enough have been sold in the U.S. now to reduce gasoline consumption, even though the number of miles traveled has gone up. Do we see an impact like that in Canada when it comes to gasoline sales?
I don't think you could really put a button on a significant number yet. I think the penetration of EVs in Canada is less than the States. That's just my guess. I don't have any data to argue that. I think the key thing is the distances. You know, the charges and how long it takes to charge, the amount of charging stations across the country. You know, if you live in Toronto and you're going up to your place in Muskoka, do you really have enough of a charge to get there? You know, or do you need to stop? You know, if you're driving, any length of distance in Alberta or Saskatchewan or Manitoba, you know, the charges are not going to be sufficient. So I think it's going to be only when we see faster charging times and longer range on the batteries that I think you'll see penetration, especially in Western Canada, pick up. In the urban markets, you see a lot of Teslas in Calgary and Edmonton, because people live here and they can charge up, in their community. But for long distance driving, like for me, if I'm the only real driving I do outside of in the city is going up to Edmonton to see family. And until I can have a car that I can charge up in Calgary, drive to Edmonton and come home without having to stop and find a charging station, I'm really not interested in buying an EV.
Any more talk of that Hyperloop connection between Calgary and Edmonton?
I think in the minds of politicians that assume there's a gravy train somewhere that's going to pay for it, and also there's rail talk of a high-speed train between Edmonton and Calgary, but, you know, we hear all of these, glory projects, and, of course, the economics really don't make sense. You know, we don't have the density of population you have in Toronto and Montreal that a high-speed train would work there, and they don't have one. So, or the loop or, between Toronto, Ottawa, Montreal, that corridor, they don't even have them in the States in a lot of places. So where you've got dense population. So I'm skeptical about those things happening in my lifetime.
Yes. And plus, once you get between Edmonton and Calgary, they're both cities where you really need a car to get around.
That's true. Yeah, like I've talked to Edmonton's airport is so far from the city, to take a cab, it's almost the same as the cost of a plane ride. So, no, I'm just being cynical there. But, the reality is, you'd need to rent a car or, have my daughter come pick me up at the airport. But we drive up all the time. You know, it's a nice, comfortable 3-hour drive. You stop in Red Deer, for a bathroom break and a coffee and then maybe, stop at the Chapters and, find another good book to read. But the reality is, at this point, EVs don't make any sense. And, I think that's something number one, a lot of people, are concerned about, the Teslas, with the self-driving. They don't want to go near it. Because of the concern, you've seen some more accidents announcements today by Tesla, self-driving taking over the car and having an accident in the States. And people now are saying, I'm buying the car without it, just to make sure it doesn't overtake them driving. Some of them just like it for the parking. That's the only feature they like. But I think until we start seeing more of the mainline manufacturers offering product, and that the cost gets to be reasonable, I think we're looking at something that's, the cost of cars have just become unaffordable in this inflationary time. You've got, likelihood of taxes going up. Food inflation is not over. Wages have not kept up with, as we saw from the CRA employees, Receiver General employees still on strike, and the federal government employees going back to work with what they say the wage component wasn't so big, but the benefits could be considered obscene in terms of how generous they may have been. So we don't know the details yet, but if they got a very big wage increase, it's just going to make it tougher on the Bank of Canada, and it's going to make tougher on other employers who have to compete for the same type of workers.
We'll have more with Joseph Schachter right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Joseph Schachter. Joseph, last September, we saw gasoline prices in Vancouver hit $2.67 a liter, $10.68 a Canadian gallon. What kind of gasoline prices are we looking at this year?
Well, I think for the next number of months, as I said, we're between 64, 65, 66, let's say, on the bottom for WTI up to 74. So whatever the price is right now, if it's 180 or 190, we're 146, I think, at Calgary right now. So we're looking at a range maybe between, 135 and maybe 160 through the summer. What I'm concerned about is that with the industry, facing backlash from government, you have that Line 5 potential problem in the States. Biden is continuing to push his, environmental agenda, anti-fossil fuel agenda. And if it looks like, he's going to have a shot at being, getting the presidency for another 4-year term, I think we're looking at an anti-energy industry. The best one probably is going to be natural gas, but heavy oil and the coal will be in the gun sights of the environmentalists and climatologists, especially if we do have a very bad summer and a lot of fires and record warm temperatures. So I think that in the years ahead, we're likely to see higher commodity prices. My expectation now, and we've been writing about that, is sometime during Q4, we think we're going to get over $90 WTI. So from the 72 today to over 90, that's a big jump. And that potentially, if the industry doesn't respond with bringing on more production, and the data from the U.S. EIA that came out yesterday showed that the U.S. production fell 100,000 from a week ago, from 12.3 to 12.2 million. It's still up nicely from a year ago. It's 12.2 year to date versus 11.7. But if we start seeing the industry spend less money and the drilling industry cuts back because of low natural gas prices and stops drilling as well, then we could be looking at much higher prices going into 2024. So if you're asking me, is there a chance for 250, 260 prices in BC in 2024, I would put at least a 1 in 3 chance that you're going to see record prices next year again.
What's the feeling in the oil and gas industry about new carbon taxes being imposed by Ottawa?
If Ottawa can put in new taxes, they're going to do it, especially if they have the NDP backing them. We have an election here, in the 28th and, which is not that many days from now. Tonight at 6 o'clock in Calgary, or in Alberta, they have the, leaders debate for an hour, on the major station. So if anyone wants to tune in and, locals can tune in on that. But I think that, we've heard already from the NDP, they're going to raise the business taxes. And I think, the governments have, in general, big deficits, federally especially, that they're going to be looking for it. I was talking to a friend of mine who said, people should be looking at their home heating bill or electricity bill and look how much they pay for their natural gas and how much they pay for the climate taxes. And they may find that the climate taxes are bigger than what they paid for their usage of natural gas, which is pretty shocking. It just shows you how much the feds have already put on. And then, of course, they're still not finished.
Now, the state of the industry in Alberta, how is it doing?
Well, the industry if you're in the oily side and you take into account the Canadian dollar differential, you know, if you're getting, 71, 72 for WTI and you're getting in mid-50s for WCS, you multiply that by the 1.36, 1.37 for the exchange rate, they're doing quite well. So the numbers are pretty good. The problem is the $2 handle on natural gas. And if you didn't put in hedges, you know, when the good days were there, and, you know, some companies in Q1 had $4, $5, and $6 hedge books, which helped out. But if you were in the spot market and you're getting $2, you're not making much money. But if you have, 20% liquids, then you should be able to have enough money coming in the door to pay for your CapEx and for any dividends that you might be paying, keep the lights going. But, I'm in the optimistic camp that we're going to see both commodities do better in the weeks ahead. If we do have a hot summer, we're all going to be using our air conditioners more. So that's going to be a consumer of natural gas, especially with coal-fired facilities closed in Alberta. You may have seen Ontario announce just today, I think, that they're going to be moving more towards, renewables, wind and solar, but also to expanding their natural gas-fired cogen facilities. So natural gas is going to be a big part of the solution and meeting the needs that we need for electricity, because the problem you have is in Quebec and Ontario, they're almost at the maximum capacity of the electric generation that they have today. And of course, to try to do more hydro and nuclear takes a very, very long time. So the only one that can come on with reasonably quick new capacity is the renewables and natural gas fired. And again, you still have approval issues there. The NIMBY issue, not in my backyard. So if you're near a community that has a political power base, then they're going to move it elsewhere.
Well, Quebec has been opposed to natural gas lines for the longest time, yet they want to heat their homes in the winter, don't they?
Oh, yeah. They still use a lot of natural gas. And what's interesting is the Quebec Hydro is now maxed out because they've sold so much to the United States. They thought, oh, we're going to be able to bring on more and more. And, of course, the Americans were just hungry for it because it's clean electricity. So New York State and all the others bought up a ton of it, and then New York State put in the provisions, oh, we're not going to allow ranges in houses anymore in new construction. And so you've got this anti-natural gas view there, and they're all trying to sign up more Quebec Hydro. And, of course, Quebec gets it from Labrador. I think Newfoundland ends up in the driving seat now with Labrador, because if they want to do more facilities in Labrador, they're going to have to give Newfoundland not a rape job. They're going to have to give them an economic job that justifies them giving the support. So I think instead of Quebec benefiting so much from what they've done to Labrador and Newfoundland, it looks like Newfoundland's going to be at the table, getting more from them. And if the Quebec government doesn't want to pay for it itself, then it's going to have to be Ottawa that says to Newfoundland, "Okay, here's what we're going to do for you to get you at the table to sign off on this."
Now, Europe would love to have Canadian natural gas instead of having to rely on Russia. Why aren't we building facilities to ship it that way?
Well, the east coast of Canada, Quebec doesn't want pipelines through them. There's been a number of proposals that have been canceled recently, as you may remember. It looks like the only way we're going to get LNG is going to be, two ways. One is going to, of course, be the LNG on the west coast, and LNG Canada coastal gas pipeline are being built. LNG Canada is expected to announce the second train, so we'll go from 2.1 to 4.2 BCF there. Cedars has gotten approval from the BC government and some approvals from the feds, and then you've got Woodfibre and you've got other projects in the queue. So right now there's about 17 BCF being produced in Western Canada. That's slowly falling down a little bit because of lack of drilling. and we've got this potential into the end of the decade of another 7 BCF of upside. That's why I'm most bullish about natural gas, because they're not going to drill and bring this on unless the economics are there, and it ain't going to be there at $2. You're going to need $5 to $7 gas, which would be very beneficial to the companies and would attract enough capital to bring on enough gas to meet the potential export markets. The other choice is some of the infrastructure companies are talking about expanding infrastructure from Canada down to the Gulf Coast, so that we may end up benefiting by sending Canadian gas into the LNG plants in the Gulf Coast. Right now, you've got Tourmaline and ARC are the only Canadian companies that are big enough to be able to contract to the Cheniers and the LNG producers on the Gulf Coast. Over time, we could see more companies getting the benefit with the help of the major infrastructure companies like Enbridge and TC Energy.
Joseph, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on? I heard there could be a diesel shortage this fall.
Yeah, I don't know enough about that. Again, though, with if we expect a decent economy and truckers busy, we really have a limit on our refining capacity in Canada. So that would not be something that I wouldn't disagree with. But I think people should realize that the energy stocks are extremely cheap. They've been beaten up. Some of them are trading at 50 cents on the dollar versus a year ago in June when we had the highs in the market. So to us, we think there's bargains out there. We also think that there's going to be a bit more of a correction here into June. But we got a great buy signals, two of them in March. We expect to get more buy signals in mid to late June. And for investors out there, when we get these kind of corrections, when these bargains are available, it definitely makes sense to be investors. And that's what we're doing with our product, is giving ideas to investors on what the bargains are out there so that they can determine for themselves based on what fits their portfolios, and they can buy them. Just for example, in March, a number of the large cap pipeline and infrastructure companies got down to 7% dividend yields, and they have the capability of growing those dividends 3 to 5%. So if you can buy it at the right price, get a 7% yield, compare that to what you can get in the bank and have some capital appreciation, those are great total return securities, and you'll do even better in the E&P and the energy service stocks. So we think people should be doing their homework and waiting for the next low-risk entry point and taking advantage of the bargains out there, because we're not going to stop using fossil fuels in my lifetime. The industry is focusing on doing the best they can do environmentally with the technology that's available today, and they're working on and spending money on trying to find new technologies that will make things even cleaner for the industry going forward. So our industry, has not stood up for themselves as much as they should based on what they're doing. And I think that as people realize, what's going on and get more information, I think they'll realize that the industry has responded and that there are a lot of companies out there that are worth owning for many, many years to come.
Joseph, thank you so much for chatting with us.
My pleasure as always.
My guest has been Joseph Schachter, founder of the Schachter Energy Report, online at schachterenergyreport.ca. He was speaking to us from Calgary. If you have any questions for Joseph or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Find us on Twitter at How Street. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.